Welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, where we will discuss all things that impact soccer coaching across all levels and ages. Please listen, enjoy, and share your thoughts on the discussions at the Soccer Coaching Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 4 of the Soccer Coaching Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Scott.
And I'm your other host, Mark.
So this week we've got a topic that we're actually going to pick up based on the back of an email that we got from one of our listeners. But we'll come on to that in a minute. First things first, Mark, I think we finished last podcast talking about the inevitable QPR victory in the FA Cup against Watford. What happened?
It didn't happen, basically. It didn't happen. Unsurprisingly, we crushed out of the FA Cup. I think it's the first time in 20 years we've got to the fifth round. We done well. Didn't quite have enough to win. But anyway, it was nice to get to the fifth round. 20 years is a long time. Hopefully it won't be another 20 years before we get there.
You were there for the game?
I was there, yeah.
Good atmosphere.
Friday night. Yeah, it was excellent. Yeah, full house. Yeah. You don't get many full houses at QPR these days. So yeah, it was good, yeah. Good atmosphere. As I said, the players done well. Couldn't take our chances and that was that. I was actually at QPR last night as well. We conceded a 94th minute goal to lose the game.
There's been some late goals at Rangers the last few weeks, hasn't
there? Yes, there has. We're on a bad run of results. I would say unlucky run of results. We've missed penalties in the last minute, conceded penalties in the last minute, conceded goals in the last minute. So,
well, it's all good entertainment.
Yeah. So we're not on a great run. Put it that way.
Well, I'm just grateful for you've not mentioned the Europa League, so we can move on now. Right?
When's that?
Second leg tomorrow night. Yeah, let's not even worry about that. All right, okay. So should we get into this?
Yeah, let's do it, yeah. So we've received another email from the US, so I'm going to read it out, and this is going to form the basis of our discussion today. So here we go. So I'm based in New Jersey in the US and coach travel soccer. With the challenges facing the US men's national team, there's been much criticism of the US coaching from grassroots to the top of the soccer pyramid. This has included criticism of college soccer, domestic leagues, scouting, the lack of subsidy for youth development, and generally just accepting the status quo. Although I understand there's merit in highlighting all of these factors, one that isn't mentioned enough, in my opinion, is the focus on winning ahead of development, especially at the younger years. Too many coaches I see in the US, coaching in the foundation phase, seem to be making decisions to protect or enhance their win-lose record, rather than prioritising the development of their players. I don't know if this is any different in any other countries, but would be keen to know if this is the same in the UK and what your thoughts on this point are specifically. Thanks in advance, Ryan Wildman. So firstly, thanks for Ryan for writing into us. It's always good to get questions and emails. And I think this is a good area to talk about, right? Really good area to talk about.
So we've got to try and fix the US men's soccer team, have we?
Yeah.
It can be a bit longer than a 45-minute podcast.
I've probably fixing my Sunday team, to be honest with you.
No, but what a very well-put question around the whole topic of winning versus development, which seems to creep up, you know, quite a lot in coaching circles, right?
Yeah, it does, yeah.
All right.
Sure. So I'm gonna let you open the discussion on this
right.
one.
Sit back.
I think in general we're aligned a lot on. I think we're going to be aligned on this, but I think there's some points where, as usual, we're going to probably disagree. So let's see where we go with it. But go on, you can kick it.
All
off.
Right, I'm going to get my high horse first, if that's okay.
Yep.
So I totally get. It's Ryan, wasn't it? Was it Ryan?
Yes.
Yeah. I totally get Ryan's question, and I would imagine the short answer is it probably isn't that much different over here in many circles. But I do have a slight reservation over the phrase winning versus development. Mm-hmm. Because so the first point would be that I think it's the wrong question to ask. And there's a reason for that. I get the principle behind it, and we'll come on to that in a minute, I'm sure. But the reason I think winning versus development is wrong is because, first of all, let's think about what we're doing here. So football or soccer, it's a sport. Right, so it's a sport, and if you think about what a sport is, regardless of what that actual sport may be, but sport in general, that is an activity which usually involves some physical exertion and a skill in which an individual or a team will compete against another or others for entertainment. So they're competing for something, right? So that's sport. So if we can accept that football, soccer is a sport, and part of sport is to compete, well, compete means You know, it's about striving to win something by defeating or becoming superior over others. Okay, so win is part of competing, and competing is part of a sport.
Yep.
So for me, this means that winning and in turn obviously losing, they're intrinsically built into sport.
Yep.
And therefore, they're built into football. And you can't remove it, and you can't choose whether or not to have it. It's not that if you accept the fact that it can't be non-competitive, a sport can't be non-competitive. It can be child-centered and it can be refocused, but it can't be non-competitive. Therefore, if it can't be non-competitive, it's got to have a win-lose element to it. Yeah. Therefore, you can't take winning out of it. And I think there's lots of coaches that when you talk about our winning versus development, they don't like that for the right reasons, because winning is part of the sport. So I will finish.
Yeah.
If we can accept that winning is part of the game, then we can stop the debate over winning being the issue. Even for the foundation phase and development phase. And you can't say, is it a good thing or a bad thing? Because it's neither. Winning is just part of the sport. It's like the balls or the goals or the players. It's just built into it. So for me, it's not a question of winning versus development, but it is a question of how much coaches will prioritise the result of a match over the development of their players.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference. And it may seem, you know, just like a minor difference, but to me, I think it's a big difference, because the minute you say, actually, no, winning's fine, you should go and want to win the games that you're playing. But the question is, how much are you going to prioritise the result of the game that you're playing over the decisions around the development of the players individually or collectively?
Yeah.
Yep. So I would like to take Ryan's question, if it's okay, and just reposition in that context and say, let's accept winning's all right, you know, because you can't do nothing about it. It's built into the sport, as is losing. But what you can manage is how much you choose to focus on the result of the games you're playing.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I think there's a lot of good points in there. So I think my first point to you is, I know you mentioned that it can't be non-competitive. Now the FA have a big thing around the foundation phase that talks about the matches are non-competitive matches, right? And we've seen it. We've been through it.
Never played one.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. We've been through it under fives, under sixes, right through to under tens now. And there's no such thing as a non-competitive game, right? It's always both sets of players want to win that game. There's no doubt about it.
Because you can't take competition out of sport.
And if you did, it wouldn't be a sport.
It's not a sport. You're playing a game of something, but it's not a sport.
Agree. And I think it's great learning for the players, for the boys, for the girls that are playing, to understand what winning's all about and what losing's all about, right? Because in life, outside, again, and I know I'll go on to this point quite a lot, outside of football, which should be part of what we're doing is helping... our players in general in life,
that character building stuff.
Exactly, yeah, they have to go through periods of winning and losing, whether it's at work, whether it's in sport, whatever you're doing, nothing's always going to go well for you, so you've got to deal with those kind of different situations and circumstances. So it is an important part of sport, 100%, and this whole non-competitive description, and it is a description that the FA give it, I don't buy into it. I don't kind of necessarily agree with it. I agree with what you're saying. It comes back to the fact of it's results versus development a little bit.
Well, I think even the FA, I mean, they do, I think it's misphrased, and I do think non-competitive, I think the intention is right, but it actually, what they should be saying is, particularly at the development phase, it should be child-centred competition. So it is competition, and therefore it's competitive, and therefore it involves winning and losing, but hell, it should be child-centred. Now, that could be a U6 or it could be a U16, they're still children, right? And, you know, even if you're a 36-year-old professional playing in the Premier League, you're still trying to develop yourself as a player. I don't see any players not turning up for training, you know, trying to get better at what they do. So development still plays part of it, even if categorically your daily livelihood depends on results of a game. So development still plays part of that. Yeah. It's probably a scale. You know, if you're playing for an under-10s team, you know, in a region, even for a local academy, the result of the next game probably isn't that important.
Yep.
Probably not even 10% of the, you know, 90% of its development, 10% of it may be the result of the game. You know, where actually the other end of the scale, it may be the other way around, where it might be 30-70. But development's still going to be part of it, right? Yep. But I think it's wrong to say winning's a problem, and I think it's wrong to say non-competitive, because what you do there is straight away fuel the fires of those coaches that don't want to even look at, okay, what is my options around development, you know, because actually I'm not having it, it's not about winning, I'm not having that, it's non-competitive. And I think they're right to say that. Yeah. So then they shut the door on anything else around, okay, what could I do even more to focus my attention away from the result, or at least manipulate the result a bit better, you know, that I can use some of that learning opportunity to improve my opportunity, the learning opportunities for the players and the team.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, so I think we're probably in agreement around the result versus the development piece.
Should we stop there then? While we're in agreement.
Yeah, I think so. Remember that. We'll wrap it up. But I guess what does it kind of look like, right? In terms of results focused versus kind of development. And I think one thing I want to just kind of put out there as well is that winning, I think there is an element of winning which kind of helps the players as well, right? If you're winning games, it does give them confidence, it does give them belief in what they're doing. They in general, when from my experience, when we lose games, they come off happy. They're not devastated. They might be a little bit unhappy for a bit
2 minutes,
and 2 minutes, and then that's it, right?
Yeah, it's kind gone. Of
running right, and it's
different
gone.
For the coach and the parents.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But there is an argument to say that winning does help with confidence. Being confident does help with your development. So that is one thing that I want to just kind of bear in mind as we go through this and how we approach that.
Well, I think you're right, but winning is not a dirty word. I think that's the point I'm trying to make. It's okay, you know, and it's okay to want to win. And I certainly think it's the right thing for the players to want to win. How would a player develop resilience if winning wasn't part of what they were trying to do?
Yeah.
Because where does resilience come from? If there's not a win or lose element to it, I'm not a good enough coach to be able to encourage my players to develop their resilience if winning and losing isn't part of what we're doing, because I don't know how else to do it. So I think, you know, I just think it's okay to say winning's fine. Winning's part of it. That's absolutely okay. Yeah. You know, and I don't think I've ever played a game, played myself or coached a team where the team I've played against or the players I've had haven't wanted to win the game.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're playing part-time with your mates over the park, you want to win the game. Yeah. You know, I just don't, it's intrinsic, it's built into it.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's almost like you almost forget winning, and if you use the word results instead, I think, okay, then if we talk about results, then, you know, if I'm a results-focused coach, what does that look like in practice? And if I have a development focused coach, what does that look like in practice? And the reality is you'd probably be a bit of both, and it might vary depending on the day, the team, the opposition, all those kind of things, which is fine.
Yep.
But what I've never seen, or I've not seen done enough, is people actually explain, okay, what does that look like in practice, you know? Yeah. Because I might think I'm a developmental coach, but actually if I'm ticking those boxes around results focus, maybe I'm not, or maybe I don't actually really know what a development coach really really looks like, because I've never actually seen one or you know, thought about it, because at the league we're playing, we don't see much of that going on.
Yep.
So maybe we could try and go through those as an idea, and also maybe try and sell the benefits. I'm not selling both, but certainly, you know, what are the advantages? Let's be open-minded to both and explain, because there are some advantages to being results-focused as there is to being development-focused.
Yeah, 100%. Okay. Agree. So maybe, do you want me to kind of have a little talk through of the results focus?
Well, that suits your style more, doesn't it, I guess.
So listen, so I think so obviously results focused, the result of the match is clearly the priority for the parents and for the coach, and I guess as a result for the players as well. That's all that matters is the result.
Fully agree.
Training is kind of focused on how to achieve the best result. That could mean things like playing it long, if you're clearing it from the back, not keeping possession necessarily in the right places.
Yep.
Goalkeeper just kind of kicking it long without playing out from the back. Set all those pieces. Kind of things, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, set pieces, get it in the kind of box.
Quite prescriptive, I would imagine, in what they're doing. And exactly. Also probably thinking a lot about the opposition and how they play and trying to tailor your game a bit around that. You know, not thinking this about your own players and what they might need, but actually just thinking, right, how can we best nullify the opposition on the Saturday or Sunday match we've got, and you know, how can we exploit opportunities to go against them?
Yeah, totally agree. Players kind of generally play in their strongest position. And play to their strengths. And I guess that also means that from a young age you might take a lot of the big physical type boys rather than kind of a mix of smaller and older, which I think maybe is another line of discussion we can get into.
And that's not just like U14s, 15s, 16s. That can be under 6s, 7s and 8s.
Well, exactly. Even more so at that age. And as I said, we've seen it a lot of, especially if you're born in the kind of September, October, November time period, you've got a better chance of being bigger and stronger.
Yeah, with the UK season starting in September, if you're the first quartile, then I guarantee if you line the kids up in most academies, most of those kids fall in that first, 8% of the kids fall in the first or second quartile. And you've got very few that go past April as a birth date when it's September to August.
Yeah, exactly. Although I must say that I'm a December baby, and it didn't apply to me.
No, he was always I think you call it an outlier. Is that what they call it? But not in a positive
exception
way.
To the rule, I think. Yeah, the team is. I guess the team plays in a fairly rigid fashion. The formation might be pretty kind of prescriptive. There's limited decision making for the players. You might have a player. Right, your job is you're just a defender. That's all you do, right? You get the ball, you kind of push it forward. That's all you do. There's no kind of question of when you go forward, when you go back, and thinking of positioning where you should be.
Yep.
There's lots of instruction from the coach on the sidelines, especially around what to do, what not to do. Lots using, I guess, words like "don't do this," "do this," "we must do this," "never do this," "always do this." Yep. That kind of thing, right?
Yep.
Players are encouraged to try things, and mistakes are kind of criticised, I think, not to try things. I guess what I'm trying to say is that players don't use their own kind of imagination, or don't try to be creative.
Creativity, doesn't
it? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's no creativity on the pitch.
Too scared to make a mistake because it could cost you a goal and that can hit the result.
Exactly. And not just, I think in general, players don't want to make mistakes in case they concede a goal, but then is the reaction from the sideline, from the coach, right? You've made a mistake, that kind of thing.
So, how are you going to, if your keeper's made a save and got the ball in his hands, you're not going to play out wide to the back player necessarily because it's a bit risky.
Yeah.
So you're going to kick it long, right? And suddenly you've taken out that opportunity for your back player because to protect the result.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I would suggest there's probably not equal game time as well. Your strongest players are on the pitch for longer than the weaker players or the so-called weaker players.
Or if the other team gets a goal and you just might make a change then because you want to get your player back on that's...
So I think all of those kind of things, right? And I know that from my time kind of coaching, we see it on a fairly regular basis.
Yeah.
You have the best player will be out on the pitch when we play five-a-side, we split it into four quarters of 10 minutes. You might find that the biggest player or the most physical player or the best player is out on the pitch for three and a half quarters, maybe has 5 minutes rest or something. And it just, it's all about that he's out there or she's out there to kind of help them win the game.
Yeah. And then getting more game time, getting more touches of the ball and not a strong player kind of. And then at the end of the season, you're worried why we can't work out why they've kicked one of the players gone backwards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, unfortunately, we see that a lot. We see that a lot, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you don't... It's different. If you're coaching at a semi-professional level, you kind of got more an eye on who you're playing against. You know the opponents, you know the coaching team, you know their philosophy and their approach, and you kind of know what you're going to get. And it is about, it's more linked towards results, which is fine. I think when you're coaching at a foundation phase, and it is primarily about development, and you don't know the opposition, and teams can change, literally from game to game because they're rotating players, things like that. You just often see that... a lot of those things you've listed there play out in practice, which kind of, and it's not a criticism. And I think the important thing to say here isn't about us saying, even what is right and wrong. We might have our own philosophical opinion about this, and we maybe sell some of our beliefs into why one might be better than the other in certain approaches. But I would also probably say that I've done some of these things. I'm guilty of some of these things. And you kind of just, this is about making you consciously aware of actually, do you know what? Maybe I've been a bit rigid in some of the times I put the players in formations because I think actually it's quite effective for me, but it's not what that's doing straight away. It's taking away their ability to make decisions for themselves. Yeah. Why don't you just let the boys play a little bit so they can work it out for themselves? you know, you can put the girls out there and think, actually, you know, maybe they can sort out a better formation for themselves. We have a little chat about things and agree it, you know. So it's not, you're not trying to be too preachy here again. It's just about saying, okay, think about these things, because these are results focused actions.
Yep.
And are these the things that you do? And if they are you okay with it? If you are, fine. If your players and parents are too, then that's fine.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the development focused stuff, and you might just want to think about some of these things, because actually, if you can think longer term and you're willing to sacrifice some results in the short term, then you may reap the rewards for it, right?
Yeah, I totally agree.
There's a couple of things as well. I mean, things like I often see results team where the coach will lead all the team talks, you know, and there's lots of telling, so the players are very submissive to the coach, you know. It's very much the coach show. And I know part of that is sometimes because you don't have much time, you want to give them all the answers rather than give them the questions, but ultimately, really, you know, what opportunity is that taking away from the players to be involved in that process?
And actually, do you know what, at that point, I don't necessarily think that's just on result focus. I think there'd be elements of that that comes into probably more development focused coaches. True. As well.
Yeah.
It's just they have that's their style.
Yeah.
But certainly you would see that more results focused, and players are kind of told what they should be doing.
Yeah.
And there's not many kind of questions asked at halftime or the end of each quarter, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And you think, well, actually, if you're just going to tell the players everything, well, they get in the habit of not having to think for themselves, do they? Yeah. Just going to tell them also.
Totally.
And the result is obviously, in a results-focused team, the result is most of the success. So, you know, you kind of don't look at how the team may have performed individually or collectively. You don't look at your focus of the match, maybe. You maybe don't even have a match focus that relates into training. It's just like, okay, we won 4-3 yesterday.
Yeah.
And you kind of, if you want to know if you're a results-focused coach or not, I think the acid test for this is, look at your text message or your WhatsApp messages for the last few months. And when you've pinged a friend or somebody else and you've shared your result for the week, or how the game's gone for the weekend, I should say, do you start with the result first? Yeah. Because if you do, you may find, I'm not saying never, you may find you're more results focused than you think, or maybe you know that you are.
Yeah.
But if your first thing is brilliant, 1-4-3 this weekend, you know, and you talk about the victory. Yeah, but if your messages are the players did X, Y, and Z, we worked this was a brilliant thing. Oh, and the result was, or even better, so you don't even mention the result. I think maybe you might be more of a developmental focused coach. You know,
yeah.
So that's not hard and fast. It's certainly not a scientific experiment. So what about, so we could go on, so we talk about development focus then. So
let's do that.
There's a list there. So, you know, the idea being, look, have a think about that and think, okay, out of those things, what do I do? And, you know, you might not be, you do them all the time, but you maybe do some of the time. So if I was a development focused coach, I think, well, I guess the things I'm thinking about here is, I'm trying to put the player's learning as the priority. So I'm looking at every opportunity I can to think, okay, how can I support their development? So, and using the matches as a way to support what they're doing in training.
Yeah.
I said, this isn't easy stuff, but it's the truth, isn't it? You're trying to say, actually, do you know what I mean? Forget about the result. Yes, we want to win. Yes, we want to be competitive, but I'm going to look for opportunities as much as I can in the matches to develop the players individually and collectively.
Yeah.
Is the thing.
So what do you think? Are matches or training more important?
Well, I would have said, I guess it depends on how you use them. I've changed over the last, literally, maybe the last couple of months. My ideal situation, part of Chris Fraser's conversation on episode 2 that we had with Chris, because obviously he's very pro-matches. I think I'm probably slightly set back from that, but not as pro-training as I was. we'll come on to it a bit, but I think we could better use matches to enhance our training. Because at the moment, the comparison is, okay, training, I love our training sessions, and the matches we play are very competitive. But I think there's big gaps in the matches that mean they can't be as effective as training tool as they might be. So I think if we can improve the effectiveness of the match as a training tool, then I would certainly lean even more towards the matches.
Yeah.
So if, you know, I still think training is the key, and matches are an opportunity to demonstrate that the training's working, a bit like when you go for a test. So you do your work first and you sit the test, right? And you see how you're getting on against that. But I think maybe we'll come on towards the end about actually how could we use games better to make training even more important, make it even more relevant to training. And then actually maybe matches might be the way to do it.
Okay.
So we'll come back to that one. Players rotate and play all positions, maybe when the game allows, but I certainly think rotation should be in your focus. So looking for opportunity to play a left-sided player on the right, play an offensive player at the back, you know, get a player in goal, get the keeper out a little bit. You know, these things, you should look for those opportunities,
so,
you know.
So do you think you can do that? And I know in the previous podcast we've explained that we have kind of almost a tiering, right, in our age group. So we have an A team, a B team, and a C team.
Yeah.
That player rotation, do you think you can do that in it for every ability? Because obviously I've seen it like kind of with an A team, and it kind of it works well. And I've seen what you've done with the under sixes and now into the under sevens, and it's worked fantastically well. Do you think you can do it for all abilities, rotate positions, or do you think you need to be a bit more controlled in terms of maybe it's one or two positions they play, or two or three positions, I should say?
Yeah, I think you have to, and I'll tell you why, and I'll get your point, it's a fair question. In an ideal world, the idea of streaming players, which is controversial in many ways, and I get that, although I was against it 5 years ago, I totally get it now, and I support it if it's done properly and done on the right terms.
Yeah.
But so you stream the players into, you know, maybe top set, middle set, and a bottom set at that moment in time, you know.
Yeah.
And this isn't carved in stone either, you know. This isn't hard and fast. You're not going to be a C team player for the rest of your life. If you want to work hard and kick a ball a bit more times, you'll work your way up, and vice versa. But the reason I think you have to rotate at all levels, well, first of all, you should be able to do it because actually the competition should be relative, right? Yeah. So the A team play against A team players. You know, so the challenge should be the same. It doesn't always work that way.
Yeah.
Particularly on the smaller side of games where one player can dominate. So you might have a C team playing a C team, and, you know, out of the seven players on each team, six are evenly matched, but there's one strong player on the other team that can dominate, and it skews the game a little bit, which can happen on the small side of 4v4s or 5v5 games. But the reason that you have to do it is the fact that if nothing else, forget about football, if nothing else, what does it tell little Jimmy when he just plays it back every game? You know, or most games.
Yeah.
You know, and even for one game. You know, now we rotate our players back in the U7s. Now, don't get me wrong, I think it's the right thing to do. But also, the boys are desperate to get up front. Now, I want them to learn to be at the back as well, you know. Yeah. So even people say, well, maybe just do a game, one game at the back and one game at front and do that, which I see the logic in that. Is, you know, you get a bit more sense to get used to that position. But the boys don't want to play a whole game at the back.
Yeah.
They want to have their go up front. They'll do the job at the back.
Goals, right?
They want to score goals. And they can score goals in the back, right? Yeah. A lot of our players do.
Yeah.
But they still want to be up front and they want to do the thing. And, you know, because it's a bit more freedom, a bit more creative. You get even in this formation, the way we're playing, we encourage the boys to play football and play from the back. But, you know, that you're still going to get more opportunities up front and there's slightly less pressure. So they want to play this. So even just doing 10-10-10 kind of, you know, rotating front and back, they don't want a whole game up at the back. Nobody does. And they won't enjoy that game experience. They're sharing all game time equally and all positions equally. So it's a real team effort, you know. They've got to do their job when they're in each of the positions because the other players have done it for them at other times. So for me, I can't see a way outside of that that would make it right. Mm. And I do think if you want to teach the players to be effective players in the years to come, it's not about having the ability to play right. You may end up, I mean, there's loads of cases where players have ended up, you know, they started as of attackers or left wingers and ended up playing at the back or vice versa. We've seen that. Even Ashley Young, I mean, that you kind of take Premier League players that have played in one position for years and then suddenly revert to a different position because that's just how the game has unfolded for them.
Yeah.
And I mean, the famous player that, and this is going back to the probably the early 90s, Dennis Bergkamp. He was at Ajax and he asked to play right back, as I understand it, for a whole season so he could learn how to be a right back so he could be a more effective left winger, because he could think like a right back, he'd be a better left winger. I mean, and he was a teenager back at Ajax, you know, whenever it was. Eriksen played different positions. I mean, they've got a whole history of doing players playing different positions that's helped him benefit. But more importantly now, I think, and that was great for understanding different roles, but I think that it's even more important now because even within the game, you change position, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, Kyle Walker at Man City, okay, he was a right back at Spurs. He plays like a right full back at Man City, but in the way that he's played, he's often playing centre midfield, right wing, sometimes even centre forward within a 3 minute period of football.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And I think the modern day game, right, with a lot, especially with playing out from the back and things like that, players have got to be. Have got to be able to do that, and I think at a younger age, the more you get used to them playing different positions, then the better. But I think also it comes down, and again we've spoken about this before. Ultimately, as coaches, we're trying to develop players. Playing different positions in the longer term will develop the players, and I think that you also we're trying to keep players and boys and girls interested in playing football into their teen years and beyond.
Adulthood,
and I think if you just played kind of little Jimmy at the back every week, then eventually he's going to get bored of that. He's going to get bored, and he's going to find another sport to do. So I think it's important. The whole rotation's important. And the reason I asked you the question about whether you can do it between A, B, and C teams, I think the reason I say that is I think you can easily do it with A teams because they're technically able to kind of deal with that. I think it's much more of a challenge when you kind of have got a B team or a C team, especially if you haven't done that from day one when you kind of took on that team and you're introducing it maybe 2 or 3 years down the line.
Yeah.
It is hard because you want to keep the team competitive, right? For me,
you're obliged to, aren't you?
They got to be competitive. So to a certain extent, you kind of have to think how you can do that as well by doing the player rotation.
I agree with you, but I'm going to challenge you because I think. Yeah. So the counter argument here would be, you're right about the players need to be able to do it, but I would say, well, if you can't stick to your principles of rotation, you're playing in the wrong league.
Yeah.
You're playing at the wrong level. You need to go down a level. Yeah. And you're both going down a level and playing against teams that actually allow you to do that rather than trying to compromise your rotation philosophy just to challenge in a slightly higher league.
Yeah.
You know, now if you're at the bottom division in the league that you're in and you still can't do it, well then you know you've got to just get your eggs in order first and see what happens after that. But I think you know you could go down, and I think that's again about philosophically being okay with it and the parents being, you know, I'd rather that our team go down a division or two to get to a level where we can keep doing these right things because the longer term development is going to be better for them.
Yeah.
And the A team argument is, well, I would say, and as nonsense as this is in reality, there's a lot more pressure.
Yeah.
Like it is, it's crazy, but it just is, and it's no, it is no more important than a B or a C team. It simply isn't. It's nonsense to say that it is. Who cares who wins the under nines top division? Really, you know. Yeah. I mean, I've seen how much sometimes these U7s, U8s game means to parents and players in the moment. Mm. But I guarantee now, if I ask those coaches that we were looking at 4 or 5 years ago playing against them, what their first three results were of their first game at U7s, they wouldn't know their first three results. Yeah. At that time, it meant everything to them.
Yeah.
You know, literally, to, you know, way over the top in some cases. And it has to me, on occasions, meant far too much in the moment.
Yeah,
but you look back and think it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I think in some ways, the A team have different challenges than a B or a C team do. What people don't like to do is not win the games, you know, and that's the thing, and I get it, and it's hard to accept that, but you know, or they what they do is they focus too much on the results to get them where they want to go, and then you question, what am I compromising to get the result? Because actually, I want to stay in this league, I want to do that, and it's not a criticism because you know it's an emotive thing, isn't it? Yeah. Being a coach and sport, and like you said at the beginning, players want to win and they want some success, and you don't want to just keep failing every single week. But then, okay, go down to the division you should be in. Do the right things that division and the successes will come.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we're doing the right
thing. That's fine. And I think one point we haven't mentioned, actually, we talk about the players wanting to win. I think it's okay for the coaches to want to win, right?
Totally.
I go to every game.
Yeah.
Every Sunday morning, I wake up and I want to win that game of football.
Yeah.
But I want to win it in the right way.
Yeah.
I want the boys to do things. And we came off the subject of this development focused list. But I want players, the boys, the girls, to do the right thing. I don't want them to be doing the kind of wrong thing for us to win a game. But I still want to win that game, regardless.
Yeah. And it goes back to our thing about having your own philosophy and your version of right. And I know I would support your version of right, but ultimately it doesn't have to be this way. You can choose your thing, but you've got to know what you're doing. I think this is what be consciously aware of what you're doing and your approach and the impact it has, good or bad, because you know your version of right that might not be someone else's version, and that's okay, you know, but just know what you're doing.
And I
would hope from this episode of the podcast is that we just get people thinking, or coach thinking about, okay, am I doing the things that I think are correct, you know, consciously? And if I am, fine, stick to your guns, you know. And if that list from the results focus this is you and you're happy with that, and the parents and players are, you know, that's your philosophy. You stick to it and do what you think's right. Yours would be different, Mark, I know, and so would mine. But it doesn't mean that we are right. It's just maybe we could try and sort of benefits of doing these, making some of these decisions. But it's just being consciously aware of what you're doing and the reasons for it.
Yeah.
The other thing about the rotation, and you mentioned it, which I thought was a good point, you know, if one player plays one position, it has a big impact on their physical literacy development.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yep.
If you just play a player at the back, now you might give them a token just a few minutes up front here and there, but if they play 85% of their football at the back for 3 or 4 years, I guarantee their mobility will be affected by that.
Yep.
They will move in a different way than what they did if they were playing in midfield for that time, or playing up front, or playing in goal. Not saying it's good or bad, but they will move differently.
Yeah.
And they'll have to do a lot of corrective work over a number of years if that's their only involvement in sport or football, you know,
yeah,
if you like.
Yeah.
It will have an impact. The same way if they play left midfield up front, but there's more benefits to playing in midfield roles because it's more dynamic. But only up front, or particularly only as a centre-back or a back player, you know, it will impact on the literacy. And also, it'll impact on their cognitive ability to play in the moment. Because if you've only played in one position, you don't really get what other people are doing.
Yeah.
And how can you really be a great centre forward if you've never played centre back? You can't.
Yeah.
How can you be a great cop if you've never played up front? You just can't. You won't ever really understand what it's like to, you know, what the striker's thinking if you want to make that save.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I also think there'll be an argument. Someone will come up with an argument, and hopefully they do actually come back to us on this. But I think someone will say, look, I want my son just to play up front. I know he's good up front.
He's quick. He's a natural striker.
Yeah, he's a natural striker. I think if he played up front every game and played 90% of the time on the pitch, he will become a better player in that position because he's specialising in that role. So he's going to be a better player. Now, I don't agree with that, but I think there'll be someone out there that will put that argument forward.
I kick a ball against the wall, I'm going to get better at kicking a ball against the wall, 100%. You're going to get better at 100%. But his physical literacy will suffer a bit because he's playing probably one style of play.
Yeah.
He may develop physically in a different way, which may hinder that position, you know, your height wise, physique wise, athleticism wise, it may change. And I mean, what the general story is from academies, players, because they pick offensive minded players, right? They have to recruit to academies. You know, most of the players you see playing Premier or professional football, should I say, maybe it's fun to say most, but a lot of players playing professional football start playing up front. What they did at U8s, U9s, U10s, they were front players scoring all the goals.
Yep.
Now they're centre backs and left backs and right back. Ashley Cole, you know, you get so many stories of players that do that because they work backwards because physically they change.
Yep.
Now, you're right. And you can see some players that just look like they're better at playing a certain way. And there probably is an argument. Your point's dead valid. I guess the question would be, when do you go down that route? What age do you say, right, okay, now it's right for today, they might spend more time in that. And I would say it's a scale thing. I don't think under sevens is the right time to put them in a position. You know, whether under 16s is too late or under 26s, there's an argument, right? But I just, again, being consciously aware of the benefits of not doing it at a younger age is probably, you know, a good thing.
I just want to come back. I know you're desperate to kind of get back to your development focused points, but I just want to come back to a point you made earlier. You mentioned that so we're development focused coaches. I think hopefully that's come across so far. And you say that we may not necessarily be right. I personally think we are right, but again, some of the listeners may disagree with us, and I really encourage them to kind of engage in some dialogue with us. But I strongly believe that if you were a winning only coach or results focused coach, I was development focused, and we had two teams, exactly the same ability in those two teams.
Yep.
You were just focused on winning the game, so you would kick it long. Your goalkeeper would kick it long straight away. You would play your biggest player most of the game. You'd play your best player most of the game.
Yep.
I was development focused.
Yep.
I like to play out from the back, keep the ball, that kind of stuff.
Yep. Rotating the players around.
Positions,
equal playing time.
Exactly. That kind of stuff.
Not shouting too much. Not too much instructions. Free of formation.
There'd be a bit of shouting, I'm sure. But that kind of thing. I firmly believe that you would be my team. Most weeks, for probably the first maybe couple of seasons.
So we start on day one.
Yep.
With day one, week one, we play.
Yep.
And we struggle against, you struggle against us because
you would win.
We've got some advantages.
Yep. Definitely. And you would play to your strengths, you would win.
Yep.
But I think over time, we would get closer and closer and closer. And then there'd be some point, there'd be a cutoff point where actually we would beat you. And then I think it would just be the trajectory would just be very, very high in terms of how quickly how much we would win by, because we've focused on improving the players from a technical basis, from their understanding of the game. We've challenged them to come up with solutions, and we haven't just given them all the answers. So I think And that's why I think we're right, because that I strongly believe that will happen over a period of time. Now, that might be a few years.
Yeah.
It may not happen. It certainly won't happen in weeks and months. It'll be more years. But over the longer term, and that's what we're here to do, to develop players for the longer term, we would be a stronger team.
You'd have players that can think for themselves, can rotate in positions, can be more flexible in formations, can talk to each other, can lead each other, you know, that'll be more resilient, hopefully, if it's done in the right way.
Especially if you're losing.
Well, but that's learning, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, it is. Yeah. There is lots of, you learn a lot more when you lose than you win. You do. I mean, but winning is nice too. Yeah, by not focusing on the results, you'll have players that have probably enjoyed the experience more as well, even though, ironically, they may have lost more games. So this is where the whole winning and losing thing is a bit of a nonsense, because it doesn't matter for the kids. It might matter to us as coaches and parents, but the kids don't generally bother too much about that. And I know there'll be some people say, oh, my kid does, but I'm going to say now, the only kids I've ever seen that care about the results or winning or losing are the ones whose parents get winning and losing, you know. So I've never seen a kid who's different to their mum and dad about that. So, but you're right. Unfortunately, what plays out in practice is me then on this, in your scenario here, as the results focused coach, what I do is after 3 or 4 years in my team, little Jimmy's played at the back for 3 years. Now he's not good enough, I'm afraid, in my team, because actually he's not physically mobile enough. So he's going, he's moving out. So I'm going to find another player from down the road, another club that I'm going to bring in.
Yeah.
So I maintain my win-lose record on my strong team, not by developing my players, but by chopping and changing them, you know, passing it on to somebody else and blaming the fact that he's actually put on a few pounds and he's not quite a player he used to be.
And so you would lose Jimmy, little Jimmy would be out of the game. He wouldn't be playing.
Well, he ain't going to, confidence goes through the floor. He's been playing 18 for 4 years, done a good job there, but now the game's got a bit big for him. You know, he's got a bit, he hasn't shut up to be a big centre back anymore. He's not quite the tallest and stuff for the players to. He just can't play there, and he can't play anywhere else. He's never played anywhere else, you know. So what have I done as his coach, as his, you know, as his foundation phase coach for 4 years? I've just basically shot him in the foot so I can have a good win and lose record, and basically he's carried the burden for the rest of the team out there. He's playing at the back a lot of times, but also taking away the opportunity for other players to play at the back as well and get better for that, you know. So I think that, so what you might find is you don't end up beating me in 4 or 5 years time or 6 years time. You would have beat me if it was like for like still, but you've kept your players and you work with them and you develop them the right way. But what you fundamentally have got is what in education we call value added. So your value added to your players is quite impressive.
Yeah.
You've taken your team from here and put them to there. Now, okay, the result may not always show that value added, but their performance will, their enjoyment in the game will, their ability to play football will. You know, I actually think you would probably end up beating our team anyway, regardless, because you'll have a better morale, better team spirit. That's, you know, if you're getting really philosophical about it, I think that it would work. And my point wasn't so much about that. I think there's an argument about which is right and which is wrong, although there probably is. I just don't want to tell people what they should do. But I want people just to, I would like people just to be aware of what they're doing. Because I think the bigger problem here is, going back to, was it Ryan's email, is I think he's right to raise the question. And we have a problem probably in most, well, I think in the US, it sounds like they've got, in the UK, I think there is an issue still. But I think that part of that is, it's just people are unconscious to how they're positioning themselves. They don't know. They don't know they're doing it half the time, you know.
No,
they don't
so,
get it. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, with all respect. And it's, you know, it's coach education, I guess. You know, and I think hopefully here we're just trying to put some things out there to say, look, just think about it. If you choose to go down that route, just know you're doing it consciously.
Yeah.
You know, and the consequences and the actions. Because you don't, there's a whole lot of benefits in the short term to doing this.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the longer term, if you really want to be, you know, if a player's in development coach, then you're going to have to think about some of his other stuff on this list too.
Yeah. We missed one point, by the way.
Oh, yeah, cool.
I'm a much better coach than you are, so eventually we would beat you. So there we are.
There is that. That's fair enough.
We'll leave that. Yeah. Let's get back to the development focus. We went off a bit of a tangent there, but let's get back to the.
Players rotate in all positions. The team plays formations that challenge the players to make more decisions.
Yep.
So, you know, like the formations that aren't necessarily going to help you win a game, but they help you get the result in the match, but will encourage your players to communicate to each other, you know, interchange positions, do things so that you can have more challenging formations to do things.
I think the formation one is an interesting point, actually, and one probably that I don't fully appreciate, because I generally, in seven-a-side, in the UK, for under-10s, we play seven-a-side.
Here we go, 5-a-side, 7-a-side, 9-a-side, 11-a-side every 2 years, right? That's
exactly
how it works.
Yeah. I generally stick to the same formation. I try to move players around, but I don't change the formation too much. Because
have you ever asked your players what formation they like to play?
I've never asked them that, no.
You need a better coach than me.
Yeah, oh. Never asked them.
No, but you know what I mean? And neither have I. Yeah. Neither have I. But yeah, yeah. I think, you know, you could ask your players. They may choose that formation. But you could say to them, right, next week you're picking the formation.
Yeah.
You know? I'm just throwing out there, but why? Now they're thinking about space on the pitch. Think about that. Maybe you could ask them at half time. Have the formation we've been playing now, is it effective against his opposition? You know, you're just getting them thinking, right? And you may be blown away by the response you get. Or what's the worst that can happen? You know, this is the point about the foundation phase and what you could do.
Yeah, okay.
And I know that, again, it sounds crazy. So if you look at five-a-side football, the most basic form of competitive game that we play in England. Most people's teams will play a 1-2-1 or a 1-3 formation. One at the back, yeah, and then whatever else kind of going on around it. We play a 2-2 formation. And we play it for one reason only. Not to be more defensive, because it's not how we use the formation. We encourage one of the back players, alternately, to support the front players, depending on how the game's unfolding.
Yep.
We encourage one of the front players to support the back players, depending on how the game's unfolding. So what do they have to do? See how the game unfolds.
Yeah.
Ask, talk, converse with each other, communicate.
Yep.
Our under-7s team speak more than our under-10s team do. And not criticism under-10s, but they just do, because they have to do it from day one.
Yep.
You don't stand two at the back, two up front. It's always interchanging positions, rotation, moving things around. In the moment, in the game, often our back players score the goals because they can run onto the space where the front players have created for them.
Yep.
But then the front players have got to come back and cover for the back player if that happens. And these are 6 and 7 year olds.
Yeah.
I've not done this. The game's doing it. Yeah. You know, the game. Yeah. I'm not coaching. The game's teaching them that.
Yeah.
The 1-2-1 formation would be much more effective in many ways. And it's a diamond shape. It all looks kind of pretty. But ultimately, there's no decision making going on there. I'm a back player in the 1-2-1. I defend. I'm a left midfielder. I'm the right midfielder. I'm the front player. I score the goals. You know, two midfielders run around working really hard. The front player gets the goals. The back player blocks the shots.
Yep.
You know, what thinking is going on there? What communication? You don't have to communicate in that formation, really. There's not much. The 2-2, you've got to, you don't pretty much shut up, because the game is quite so dynamic. It's always going on. So it's a very small example of how a formation can be used to be a developmental tool.
Yep.
I want us to win the game, but if I want us, if the result really mattered, I'll go 1-2-1. I don't want to. I want the boys to be able to think in the moment and do what they want to do. But obviously it gets more complicated if you go to 7, 9, and 11 aside. There's more things going, but you can still use the formation, right?
Yeah, I think what you're saying is absolutely right. I just think the point I'm making is I've never kind of changed my formation. I'll be honest with you. I like the players to understand the formation we're playing, understand the roles and responsibilities within each of those positions, not just one, but for all those positions. So they feel confident. They feel comfortable with if I put little Jimmy centre midfield, he understands what that position does.
Well, that does,
if he plays left midfield, he understands that, or left back. So that kind of thing. And I encourage them to be creative and make their own decisions. So things like my defender, my left defender, I actively encourage them to go forward as a wing back and support. That means that I leave one-on-one at the back. That's fine. We do that all the time. We can see goals. I've got no issues with that.
Yep.
But what I do know is that when I go to 9 or 11 aside, my left defender could be easily be a left midfielder, could easily be a wing back if I wanted to play wing backs, and he's comfortable with the football.
So you're compromising the short term result of that match potentially for long term development of the player.
Yeah,
which is a great thing.
Yeah,
and I get your point, but what I would say is that I wouldn't just say you can't just go willy nilly and change formations on the fly like that, because you know we're adults that play football for a long time. These players are young and haven't done so much, possibly not any other formation maybe at that size team they're playing in. But you train it first, right? You coach, so you work a little bit. Now, you could do it as a cognitive kind of test, you know, as a real challenge for them to see who can adapt in the moment. You could just throw it on them as a surprise or get them to think of their own formation.
Yep.
But you're right. You probably should train it first, would be the best thing to do. But there is other ways in which you could use it without training it first, right?
Yeah, I've set up friendly games on a Saturday. And they've been against an opposition which I think we can be competitive against.
Yeah.
And in those friendlies, my assistant coach has kind of said, "Oh, let's try this formation," and we go and try that formation.
Yeah.
Or we just literally put the board down and we say to the boys, "Right, you choose. This is the formation we're playing." So we don't give them the formation. You choose the positions you want to play in today. So I'm not going to set in it. They can go out and choose it.
Yep.
So
you've done it in friendly games, but not in the league games.
I don't do that in the league games.
I get you.
Yeah. We have purpose games for that.
Yep.
Just to do something different and completely mix it up. I'm a bit more kind of structured probably in the games, the league games.
Yeah.
But we still kind of move positions, and we still allow the players on the pitch to make decisions in terms of where they should be and things like that.
Yeah. Which, yeah. So, and it is a spectrum, right? It's not like, yeah, it's not black and white. It's not like, right, you can do this or do that. It's a scale, isn't it? Like, yeah, you could just rock up and put the tactics board out and say, right, pick who's playing, pick the two sub and pick the formation. Yeah. Or you could say, right, choose who, one or two formations. Or you could say, okay, we're going to start with this. Let's see how the game unfolds. And then you decide players or captain how you want to adapt it. You know, you could ask him what the opposition's doing and the challenges there, because obviously oppositions might play different formations depending, you know, you might have two up front, one up front or something, which might impact on what you choose to do. I just think, and again, and I say this, and I don't do this, so I'm not preaching here by any stretch of the imagination, I just don't think we let the players have enough engagement in that process, you know, and I think that we'd be better for it if we did. And yep, they'd enjoy it more as well. You get the saying it, because it's not the Scott show. Then it's about the players. And I think I'm quite a player centred coach, but I'm nowhere near enough as I need to be and want to be.
Yeah.
The age group has an impact, I think, but again, I don't want to sell them short, because it's amazing what a bunch of under sevens can do when you give them the opportunity to do it.
Well, you've seen it, right?
I've seen it, and under tens, you know, definitely, especially smart under tens, and you know, you've got a bunch of really good boys there, smart lads that know each other really well, and I think sometimes it's a time issue. We want to give them the answers a bit quicker or get there because we haven't got as much time as we would like.
Yeah.
But that's also a bit of an excuse. We've actually got, and you've got another 10 years, really, 6 years with the boys, potentially. Yeah. You know, so there is plenty of time, really.
Yeah.
It's just having the, I guess, the courage in some ways on our part to trust the players that whatever the outcome, they'll learn from the process of doing it.
Yeah.
And it may hit the result, which may in turn hit winning or losing. But actually, winning then is... you've already won, haven't you? Because you've given an exercise there that the result doesn't matter. But by them learning about a formation, having their own contribution to how that may unfold in the moment, you've already won. You know, the winning then is about that. You know, okay, there's a game going on, there's a result, because it's got to be, because that's part of competing. You need a score line. Otherwise, how do you measure competition? So the result is still there. So, but you're saying, I don't care about the result. If I do this, I've already won as the coach.
Yeah.
You know, that's the win for today, because that's a massive tick in the box of development. And I might do it again next week and the week after. But ultimately, what I'll get then is a bunch of boys that understand formations and how they might need to change them. Then now they're thinking the game, okay, this isn't working. What can we do differently? You know, and what a beautiful moment is suddenly. Well, your centre midfield player suddenly said, I'll tell you what, let's go two up front. And he pushed one of the players up front, or your captain's made a decision in that because he saw the space there for a thing. You know, that's the kind of stuff you want to work towards, right? I mean, it's a bit out there, but why couldn't it happen?
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah.
All right. Shall I finish this list off?
Yeah, do it.
Yeah,
do it.
Okay. So development focus list, okay? So the coach provides guidance and asks the players questions at appropriate times during the game. Yeah. So again, so you're not barking orders. You think about when to talk to the players and how you talk to them.
You're not shouting the classic shoot.
Pass. Shoot. Joystick coaching. But not even that. I just think, you know, not even just the body language, the way you react when there's a mistake and stuff. And we all do it in the moment. It's emotive. I don't say these things not thinking that I'm not guilty of some of this stuff, because I definitely am. You know, but the more conscious you can be of it, then maybe the more you can manage those moments. But, you know, there's no excuse for joystick coaching. The more you're telling your players what to do instructionally in a match, just shows the more you've got the training wrong.
Yeah.
I say with all respect, you know, it's like, you know, don't blame them if it's not going right in the game. It's all on you as coaches, and something's not gone quite right, you know. And the classic line, we did this yesterday, they haven't got it today. Well, what you did yesterday wasn't what they needed for today, because you haven't, you know, something's not gone right with that. Creative independent decision making is encouraged even if mistakes are made. So get on the ball, make good choices, encourage the players to do that, even if they make mistakes, because they might do it three times and get it wrong, but the fourth time might be the moment it all clicks into place.
I think the classic, I think we've spoken about this before on a previous podcast, I think if the players are not making mistakes, then they're not trying to be creative themselves. They're not getting the right coaching. From they're either afraid to make mistakes because they're afraid of what the coach is going to say, or they're just not being creative. And
they're not being challenged enough. It should be, how many mistakes do my players make today trying to do the right things?
Yeah.
You know, and if the answer is none, then they're not being challenged enough, or they're too scared to give things a go. You know, and it may hit the result of the game, but you're already winning. You're winning by encouraging them to do the right things, and it will pay dividend in the longer term. Yeah.
And I like my goalkeeper to roll it out, to play it from the back. I don't want him to kick it long unless it's the right thing to do. And it's going to lead to mistakes, and we're going to lead to conceding goals, but that's fine. I understand the consequences of doing that. But I think it's great, the learning, because the next time the players will know that I'm happy to try that, but actually, is that the right thing to do when I've got the opposition that close, kind of thing? So it makes them kind of think through and they learn from that experience.
Yeah, but even that, I would say, and I do agree, but the instructions to keepers should be, look, our approach is to try and retain the ball and try and keep the ball to make the space to move the ball forward, which is usually playing it short, right?
Yep.
However, you know, if you do it every time, they're going to know what we're doing. So use your common sense. Sometimes, you know, just keep them guessing.
Yeah.
So if there is a good longer pass on that you think you can play, I'm okay with that. You know, that makes sense, because it's two things. You may come off. It's always hard to be a longer pass. So, you know, it reduces the likelihood of it being accurate the further you go, right?
Yep.
But it may come off, which creates an opportunity for us. Fantastic. But even if it doesn't come off, what it has done is kept the opposition guessing what you might do next time. So that gives a little bit more, maybe another 3 or 4 yards extra space for our fullback to get the play, to get the ball and think about what they're going to do. So again, I think if you just hard and fast, if it's like we will always play out of foot or we will never kick it long, I think straight away you're taking decisions out of the equation for the player. So it's really careful. The intention is all great, and I know you don't. I know how you do it with your team, so you're not hard and fast on this stuff. But I think I've seen coaches that say this: we will always play from the back. Everything. Yeah, I get it, but you're giving a massive advantage to the opposition here because they're not going to do it every single time, and you've taken away all decision making for your players.
Yeah,
you know. So you know, but even best intentions can sometimes be counterproductive.
Agree.
Coach encourages the players to lead team talks and share ideas about how they are playing and possible changes. So I wonder how many coaches out there, the first players you speak at half time or the quarters are the players, you know, because I just actively encourage it. How are we getting on today? You know, what do you think's working? What can we do better? Well. Yeah. What we're doing well, you know, what would you do? You know, get it from them first. The player's progress, both individually and collectively, is the measure of success. So you see past the result of the game and you think, okay, you know what? Like you said, you know, we rotated our players today. We did this. The result didn't come out in our favour, but we won in many other ways because we got our rotation policy out there today. We did a lot of work. We worked on training the day before. I can see the players improving on their first touches. I can see them sharing the ball at the right moments, better decision making, better creativity. You know, there's wins there, you know, seeing past the result of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen games where teams have won, you know, and I'm just like, I would rather have lost that game than won it playing the way they played, with all respect, because they haven't, there's no win there. There's the result, but there's no win there. And the other team has won a lot more, you know, for the longer term, and their players have benefited so much more from the approach they've taken, even the result wasn't on their side.
Yeah. It's actually funny because you generally, when you play a match, you get a feeling whether a coach is development focused or result focused, and actually you take quite a lot of satisfaction when you beat a result focused coach.
That's why it's the win, isn't it?
I know it's not about winning, but do you know what I mean? You get a lot.
It could be about winning.
You can win about the result, but you get a lot of satisfaction from that, right?
You've already won, right? Because you're doing the right thing.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
If you get the result as well, well, there you go. That's the cherry on top, and that's the jam. Exactly. Jamming the biscuit. Last 2 points. Players are selected on both their technical and physical abilities, as well as their enthusiasm to learn and improve. So not just about physically big boys, but technical boys that want to play football. Players, I should say, that want to play football and their enthusiasm to want to learn and stuff, you know, and the right attitude. And players are set challenges and have to find their own solutions. So it's not a case of just right. The coach tells everyone what they've got to do and how to do it. They, you know, they encourage the players to. They give them a challenge, and the player has to try and solve that challenge. It could be a unit, or it could be a team challenge. It hasn't got to be individual, but that's it. So I think if you look on those lists there, hopefully coaches can think, okay, out of those lists on the results focused or development focused, you know, what do I do? Any of it, some of it, none of it, and where do I fit?
Yes. Yeah, I think they're good. I think you're right. Now, I think it's clear that we're development focused. I think we've said that. Now, that my big question, I think a lot of people are going to have this question, is how do we kind of get the parents on board with a development focused coaching environment? And I know there's some things that I've done, and I'm happy to kind of maybe I can just talk through those.
Yeah,
those
you've done
quickly.
This, so you can share it. I mean, first of all, why is it important to get them on board? I mean, let's briefly go about why it's important, and then some of the things you can do. Because you're right, in most cases, if parents don't see it, they just see the results and you not winning and think that's bad coaching and their players in the wrong team, right?
Yeah, totally agree. I think one of the things that I've done in the past, or I do, I should say, is this kind of coach's code of conduct, parents' code of conduct, and players' code of conduct. I've kind of had that in place now, and I spoke about it in the last podcast actually, but it clearly sets out, as coaches, what I can do. It clearly sets out the expectations from a player's standpoint. So one of the things in the coach's code of conduct is player development, and not winning at all costs is at the forefront of the coaching approach. That's kind of bullet point number one on the coach's code of conduct. So it's clear exactly what we want to do as coaches. And then within the parents' code of conduct, we talk about being positive, supporting their son or daughter, not giving them lots of advice on positions and things like that. Do you know what I mean? You just kind of set these expectations out up front with the parents. I think it's so important because, as we said last time out, it kind of gives you that point of reference to deal with them in future.
Do you verbalise that, or is it just a document? Do you have a meeting as well?
I haven't done in the past. I think I've spoken to parents about it, so at training.
More on a one-to-one basis.
I haven't actually kind of sat them all down and gone through it, but I think that would be a good way of doing it, to talk them through what your playing principles are, what your kind of codes of conduct are. I think that would be a great way of doing it.
Yeah.
And maybe you do that more of a new team than a team that you've probably had for a while, because I guess if you've done it right, through the age groups, they probably
built into the philosophy, isn't it? And the culture and the environment set around it, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I agree. Like, the reality is, I think we all know you will lose players, potentially good players, that parents don't buy into it.
Yes.
Yeah. They want the result of the match to be in their players' favour every weekend, and they won't believe in the rotation philosophy. They'll just, little Jimmy is a striker, he should be up in the best team scoring goals, and you know, that's it. From my experience of seeing it, little Jimmy burns out quite early on, loses the years of the game, and you know, they're the ones that drop out on the U13s, U14s and stuff. Yep. Even if they go onto the academies, you know, they're the ones that don't kind of kick on because they've not had all the other benefits of that longer term stuff that we spoke about.
Not to mention the pressure as well.
The pressure. And you know what? My argument would be, you're probably better off not having those types of players and parents in your team if your philosophy is that way inclined, because it just won't work. It's only a matter of time until something has to give, and you know, it won't, you know, it's hard to see past the results sometimes. I do understand that, but the more you can articulate that, the more you can put it down, the more you get the parents out from the outset, then the more chance you've got of making that work, right?
Yeah, totally agree. Yeah, because ultimately, when you're dealing with under sevens and under tens, the parents are bringing the boys and girls to the matches, right? So they're there every week.
It's a partnership, isn't it? You need that, and also you just don't want the headache of having to try and explain what you're doing the whole time while sitting on the touchline thinking, I've got to rotate around now and do these things that I know may cost us a goal or two, which may impact on the result of the match, and you know, I've not explained what I'm doing to anybody else, you know, or the benefits to it, because if you don't do this, why would you know about it? If you're just a parent turning up with your kid, and our experience of football coaching was very different 20, 30, 40 years ago than it is today. There's no reason why we would think different to what we thought back then, you know? Yeah. So you've got an obligation to put this out there in a way that's going to work for you, that enables you to execute it. That's the hope, right?
And a lot of the parents are watching Sky Sports on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
Where it is that you it's all about winning games, and they're reading the paper, manager getting sacked, kind of losing three games in the bounce, that kind of stuff. So it's in their minds.
And they go from that to the Sunday game and thinking it's the same thing.
Well,
I do think that, so the challenges of results approached, I think, you know, it is a short term approach. Yeah. And it only helped players to develop a limited set of skills. So I think that's one reason, you know, why you should think about a development approach rather than results approach. It does nothing to develop the players' decision-making, their leadership or their wider character, which, let's be honest, they're all fundamental in enabling players to be the best players they can be. So I don't think it does anything around character stuff. You're just results-focused. And actually, it could be counterproductive for that, because if you just results and you win lots of games in the short term, but suddenly you start losing in the longer term, that can be quite a bit of pill to swallow as well, especially for younger kids. And I think it hits players' engagement. I think, you know, if you're a coach-centered coach that's about results, I think it becomes less fun and less engaging for the players.
Yeah.
And because they don't care as much about the results as well, I think parents often think they do and coaching they do. You know, they'd rather have the fun stuff and not have the result and get wins in other ways and enjoy the experience more.
Yeah.
You know, would be fair to say for most players.
Yeah, so I think from my experience of under sevens and under eights with my current under 10 team, And as you know, we would kind of beaten convincingly most weeks. I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure I was a development focused coach back in those days so much. A few years ago.
Was that because you didn't know what it was to be probably, one, or because you were hung up on the result?
Yeah, no, I think it was just that I didn't really fully appreciate the whole the whole landscape. It was just about going and winning that game.
Yeah.
And funny enough, we never did. And it was, but the point I'm making is that actually they don't care about the result. I remember we probably lost our first maybe 8 out of 10 games.
Yeah.
And the players just didn't. They didn't. It didn't matter to them.
They come back with the same players next week, didn't they?
And stuff like that. Yeah. After the final whistle, they were all smiling and messing around. So it kind of didn't really matter to them too much.
Yeah, I think that speaks a lot, doesn't it, as well?
Yeah.
All right, so just in summary then.
Yes.
I just think, you know, a few points. I would say that probably winning is the behaviour and the actions of the players during the game and not the result for me. I mean, that's what I think, you know.
Yeah.
It is, it's, you know, how do our players behave and act in the moment in relation to the opposition, you know. And hey, if the other team's better than us and we lose, trying to do the right things, that's okay because we've already won trying to do the right things.
Yep.
You know. Now, if they've won doing the right things as well, then fair play to them. You know, we've got to work a bit harder to try and close that gap. But if they've won doing, if they got the result doing the wrong things, well, not only have we won in the sense, I think we've had a win. I think even we've won for the longer term as well, because you know, we're going to give it maybe a season or two, but we will go past this team.
Yeah.
You know, just give us a bit of time on that one.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Yeah.
I also think instead of focusing on the result of the match, we focus on how many times the players show creativity and skill and determination, concentration, resilience, decision-making. And if we recognise that mistakes in these areas are a good thing, because it means the players are trying to learn. I think, you know, that's what we should be trying to do. Because, again, we're seeing past the result for all the other stuff that's going on there, that we're helping create in the right environment for the players' longer-term benefit.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think I agree. As you know, I agree both of those. And I just a little kind of a little story, actually. Probably about a month ago, we played a match. We were playing away to a team in London. We were 2-1 up. We played well. We were 2-1 up with 5 minutes to go. And we ended up losing 3-2. I think we conceded 2 in the last 3 minutes.
It's like QPR.
Yeah, it's like QPR, exactly, yeah. So that was the kind of first time, like, as a coach, we've conceded last-minute goals, but going from a winning position to a losing position in the last couple of minutes. As a coach at the time, I know, like, I just thinking, I was like, oh, man, it was just, I felt low after that.
I felt like Mourinho.
Yeah, and it was, I had to literally kind of stand back for a few minutes and just think about what I'm going to say to the players at the end of the game, because it was just that I could see them walking off like a bit shell shocked that we'd kind of lost the game. But
you've had no time to digest it yourself,
exactly,
either, right?
Yeah. And it wasn't really until maybe a few hours later that I was able to clear my mind, look back, and think actually we played well. We conceded 2 goals. One of them was a significant mistake, put it that way.
Yeah. But which happens, right?
It happens, yeah. And it was just kind of like, actually, we played well.
It doesn't change the other 59 minutes, however long you played, the game. You kind of got to see past it.
You do have to see past it. But it doesn't, I'm happy to admit at the time, I was like...
Yeah. It's not easy, right?
It was, yeah. I was devastated, but I was like...
Look, I think it's important to finish on just by saying that I do think you have an obligation to keep your players competitive in matches, you know, and it should be a priority. So all this stuff, and that's why I think it should be a scale. I don't think you should pin your flag on the mast and say, right, I am a development coach, and regardless of anything, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
You know, and there may be a time you've got to lean slightly towards you know, the result a bit more than others, to just to keep the game interesting and competitive and keep morale up a little bit.
Yeah.
But having a toolbox of ways in which you can manage that, so any opportunity you get within the game, you can prioritise towards development, can be a good thing.
Yeah.
Totally, you haven't got to go wholesale down one route that means you're going to get talked to 10-0 every single week, because there's no fun in that for anybody. I've got to hold my hands up to that, you know. But ultimately, if you're in a league in which you can't do some of the stuff you think are better for the longer term development, then take it on the chin, get down to one that you can, you know, compromise on the rigid formations and the fixed players and all that kind of stuff for the longer term stuff, and get a little, and work their way back up, because it will happen with a stronger, better, happier team over the longer term.
I totally agree. Yeah
Sound all right?
Yeah. And I think there's, and I'm hoping we've answered kind of Ryan's question here. I think we've kind of we've covered a lot of material during this session, but I hope we've answered his question.
We could have just said yes, couldn't we, at the beginning?
We could have said yes. It would have been much easier. But I would say there's a lot of kind of reading out there as well, some good stuff to read or listen to. One, I think both of us love this book. It was Making the Ball Roll by Ray Power. I think the first section of that book is dedicated to long-term development versus prioritising winning. It's a really good read. If you don't read anything else in that book, which you should read that numerous times, all the time, I always go back to that book.
It's the grassroots go-to book. I think it works at other levels as well, but it kind of is, and also encourage your parents to read it if they're not so sold on it. I think it's a quite near by Gary Lineker about parents, if I remember rightly, but it is good, isn't it?
It's a fantastic book. But that first chapter is really, really, really worth reading.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of stuff out there, I think, around winning versus development. But like I say, I think that's the wrong question. I think it's results versus development. But what I have never seen is people actually explain what each one looks like, which I'm hoping we've done a bit today. So another recommendation, I think, came out last week, but the Modern Soccer Coach podcast, which is excellent. There was one with Todd Bean on as the guest. I think it's 11th of Feb episode, and it's You Get What You Train. And I thought this is relevant today because obviously we've had the question for Ryan in the US. It covers a lot of stuff in the US. Yeah. Okay, it's not specifically necessarily all about winning versus development, but it touches on a lot of that stuff. So I would highly recommend listening to that if you've got some time and you want another podcast to listen to. I'd recommend that. And there is a blog as well, actually, by Marco Sullivan, which, you know, I'm sure you probably heard of Marco Sullivan. He's got his foot blog ball. I'm sure if you Google that, you'll find it. And there's a blog called Towards a Player Environment Centered Approach, which probably more about our last episode around the environment on episode 3. But again, it's all relative. It's all relevant stuff. So I think three good recommendations there with the Modern Soccer Coach, the Making the Ball Roll, and the Marco Sullivan blog.
Yes.
Which should be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, we'll just finish off quickly by saying, look, thank you so much for listening. Please do subscribe because it helps us get our position on whatever podcast host you're using. And if you can, click on a rating, the stars, the more the merrier, and give us a review. That would be great too. Just to prove that we do take on board all the reviews, we had a lovely one from Jay. So thanks, Jay. And it did say, really good quality information. One point of feedback. Try and slow down the speed of your speech. Sometimes it sounds like I'm listening in fast forward, which I think is brilliant. I'm sure it's targeted you, Mark, because I know I speak really calmly all the time. Yeah. So I have tried hard on this episode to try and speak a bit slower, but it is very much a work in progress. So I'll keep working on it. But Jay, on his feedback, really appreciate it. Grateful for the 5 stars. You probably could have given us 3 or 4 for that, just based on the speed of my speech, but we're grateful, and there's others there as well that we've had, plus some tweets, plus some emails. We love the questions, and hopefully you've seen today from Ryan's one, we'd listen to it, we try and articulate an answer that we think is relevant, and hopefully cover some of the stuff in a way that gets us thinking.
And I think if you don't agree, then please let us know, please drop us a note, and
it's been quite agreeable, the replies
so far,
and if you want to reach us, then you can, to our Twitter handle is at Soccer Coach Cast. That's a capital S, capital C, and capital C for Soccer Coach and Cast. Or you can email us info@thesoccercoachingpodcast.com. Brilliant. Sound good?
Yep.
Yeah. All right. We once again, we've gone way over our 1 hour rule mark. Yep. So that's all your fault. Thanks for today, and have a great week.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everyone.